this lady was sitting there and she had discovered this is my first one, could tell I was nervous. And she said, listen to me, try and live your life as normal as you can. Don't sit there and think, oh, poor me, this, just hide away. Look at what can I do, not what can't I do. So that stuck with me and resonated with me. And I wish I knew that lady today, because I can't tell her how impactful that was for me. And that was my motto going through it. What can I do, not what can't I do?
Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. In this interview, I spent some time with Kevin McDowell, one of the top triathletes in the world, 2010 World Junior Bronze Medalist, 2017 U.S. National Champion, 2018 Mixed Relay World Bronze Medalist for a new event that's going to be making its Olympic debut in Tokyo. Very exciting. And 2020 Mixed Relay World Silver Medalist. Just an incredible athlete. But what's more amazing, maybe, is the fact that he is a cancer survivor, and he was very, very open and gracious with sharing a story about the diagnosis, going through the treatment, continuing to train, and the things he learned physically and mentally. Just so much insight and wisdom in someone that's gone through so many ups and downs in his life. And I really hope that you take some lessons from this, and I hope you enjoy this interview.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is great to meet with you. And so I was wondering, as we start off here, can you kind of just give us a highlight of your athletic career, just in your own words?
Yeah. My parents were always big on keeping me active, because I was super like crazy when I was little, needed stuff to do at all times. So they just put me in every sport to try. And then by the time I always loved to swim and then bike and then run as well around the neighborhood. So I actually found out a kids' local triathlon when I was 10, did that. And then the next year, there's actually a kids' triathlon team going on. So by the time I was 12, I'd been fully into triathlon and kind of loved it, and had to keep begging my parents to let me go and do stuff, because they were holding me back a lot through that. And then as I got going, I started going through the ranks, doing the youth racing, junior racing, racing some junior world races, and then kind of just took me to here where I'm now fully invested in the sport, professional. But by the time I was 13, it's like I wanted to do triathlon as a profession, and I had such a passion and drive for it. So
by 13, even then, did you set already an Olympic goal by that age?
Yeah. By the time I was 13, I loved triathlon. Like, I just loved watching it, loved learning about it. And at that point, I'm very goal-driven focused. And I just kind of, when I find something I like, I go all in. And by the time I was 13, I had stopped all of their sports, because my parents still wanted me to have this wide range of abilities and skills to do. But I was like, guys, I want to do this. And they were kind of holding me back still, like, well, let's not go fully into it. Let's build through it. And I had to keep begging to go to more and more practices or do different stuff. And by the time I was like 15, 16, I was like, can I keep doing this, guys? Or do you believe in me to this? And like, after that, they never questioned it again. And I just knew I wanted to make it as far as I could and make a career out of it.
And so you're the kind of a new breed of triathlete that was raised not in a single sport, specialized in a single sport, and then branched out in the other two, but really learned all three as you became more competitive. And so you were a very successful junior. You won the junior bronze medal in 2010, yes. And you turned pro shortly after that in 2011. So it was a pretty quick journey. So something interesting happens there. When you run that race, is your mom, a nurse, notices something about you. And so I was wondering if you could tell us about that and about the journey that led to.
Yeah. So in 2010, I was third at Junior Worlds, and I had one more year in that category. So my goal for 2011 was to actually win the world title my final year in juniors, because I was the number one returner and had been consistently improving. So I actually then was able to do some pro races to then try and just raise some higher level people to prepare me. So then when I go back to my full category, I'm ready to go. And a few weeks leading in, months, I kind of had some weird pains every so often in my chest and had some extra fatigue, but I just associated it to just training and just some fatigue. So then I went down to Florida for my first professional race to do when I was 18, and it actually went great. I surprised a lot of people. I was in the top 10, which I'd never expected going in. Yeah, and I was on a high. So I was kind of like, everything's fine. I was just tired, a little fatigued. But I do remember still in the middle of the race having a little pain in my neck, like chest breathing area. While I was racing, it just like felt a little restriction, but I didn't think much of it. Because you're racing, you're like, oh, that's probably just pushing my body and all that. So I go home that night, fly back home, and it's late at night. I'm talking with my mom, and she's sitting on the ground, and I'm up on my bed. And how I was sitting with my shirt, she noticed, she's a nurse. So she noticed this big lump on my neck. And I had never noticed it. It's just, you don't really notice something when it just changes to that extent. But it'd been winter, so I'm always covered up when I'm around home. So she had never seen it till that angle. So she kind of got a little nervous. I had no idea what she was thinking about. I guess she didn't sleep that night. And so the next day, she took me into the office that she works at. They went through scans, blood work, and everything the next 2 days. And they saw something weird happening in my chest. And they thought it was maybe like a torn tendon or something kind of coiled up. Because there was big, just the lump. It's like, but I was really confused about it. And then, yeah, the next 1 day later, we get the news that it was actually a tumor. And I had a tumor on against my windpipe and then a few in my chest. And so, and then they had said it's a form of cancer, which then we later learned it was Hodgkin's lymphoma. So my whole world spun by that point, where it was setting these goals for triathlon to now I was trying to fight for my life and beat cancer.
So literally this happened the day after you won the bronze. And this
this was about 6 months later.
6 months later, okay.
Yeah, so this was in March of 2011, and I raced the Junior Worlds the year before in like September of 2010. So the next Worlds I was still aiming for that year now was out the door because of all this. So
what then happens with treatment and you know, I'm assuming, you know, obviously all your training has to change, maybe stop. What does that look like, you know, post-diagnosis then?
Yeah. So once I was diagnosed, like what the protocol was that I went through. So then it was just so many doctor appointments. But because my mom was a nurse, we had some connections that from the point when I was diagnosed to 2 weeks later, I was starting my first chemo treatment. So that was pretty fast from the point of just learning everything what we needed to do and go about it. And we went to Rush Hospital in Chicago and met a couple doctors there. I had to get a biopsy to check what it was. And we knew it was a form of lymphoma or of Hodgkin's, but we didn't know if it was non-Hodgkin's or just Hodgkin's. And it came back as Hodgkin's lymphoma. And we almost had like a little celebration in that way, which was weird to think about. But Hodgkin's lymphoma, we knew, was super curable. It had a great cure rate, and they had a really good treatment plan in place. And because of my age and my health going into it, we knew should be okay. It'd be a very difficult road. And the doctor who I then saw, who wrote my plan, which is protocol, she told me, give me 6 months of your life, and then you'll be okay. But I need 6 months of your life, and it's going to be hard. We're going to have to fight and do all this, but you'll come out better in the end once you get through it. So I had that mindset that I shifted my goals right after that, where it's like, all right, my focus is no longer triathlon or this. It's let's beat this cancer and go about it and tick every box to beat it and then be cured. So I went through every other Monday. I had a treatment going in, and I go to the hospital. Sit there for a few hours. Sometimes I'd have friends who'd come with me, and I'd just get my treatment. And when I started it was crazy, actually, because I was so healthy going in. I'd actually get the treatment and go out the door and run 8 miles with my friends right after. And
you kept training.
I kept training as much. I did as like that was something. So one of the biggest impact moments I had when going in for my first chemo, which I was really nervous for. This lady was sitting there, and she had discovered this is my first one, could tell I was nervous. And she said, listen to me, try and live your life as normal as you can. Don't sit there and think, oh, poor me, this, just hide away. Look at what can I do, not what can't I do. So that stuck with me and resonated with me. And I wish I knew that lady to date, because I can't tell her how impactful that was for me. And that was my motto going through it. What can I do? Not what can't I do? So I could still train, the doctor said, to limits. I mean, I couldn't go over the top and we had to scale everything back, but it's kind of crazy because I was actually still training quite a bit through the first bit because it's just, I enjoyed doing it. I met all my friends and got to hang out with everyone still. And that was a lot of my social interaction and the kids tri team I was a part of. So yeah, I'd go to practice. And I remember actually 2 months into my chemo, I actually did a downhill mile race. And I ran like 420 something mile. And I'd been 2 months into chemo.
Wow.
And, but that was about the turning point where I could then no longer train to that ability, because then is when my body really started to break down. I lost my hair. I was losing a lot of weight by that point. And I started to get sick after every chemo, and I'd go home and I'd go 2 days without eating anything. I'd go home, lay in bed, just lay there, because I just couldn't do anything else. Could be so sick. And then it was nice because it was every 2 weeks. So I'd have 1 week that was really rough. And then the second week that it was more like normal, where I could do, hang out with my friends a bit and do stuff and be social. And that part was, it was a fine balance because I was actually trying to be very social, and that kept me so happy and mentally sane. But I would pay for it when I'd go to my next chemo treatment because I'd be out doing a lot more instead of resting and fully recovering and do a treatment. So my chemo was like the effects of it. I'd be way sicker than I could have been if I'd have been a little more rested. But for me, there was that balance. I'd rather suffer a little bit more through the chemo parts but be able to live a little bit more normal on my few good days where I felt good.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like a natural innate, tendency to set goals, in your athletic career, and you use that goal setting for your recovery.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used it for different tests of just focus to get through it. And it was funny. Because I love triathlon, and my goals had to shift from winning the world title to now just beating cancer. And I broke up my treatments into stages of the triathlon because I had 12 treatments total. So we broke them into thirds. And so once I got through one part, all my friends were texting me, "You just got through the swim. You're about to get onto the bike. Oh, you're on the final bit." And it really related in a way to triathlon because you're fresh in the beginning of the swim, feel great. And as you get going through the triathlon, the fatigue starts to hit more.
Wow.
You really start to get tired out. And that's where you really have to fight and get more like just tough mindset and keep just like one step. It's kind of like the one foot in front of the other. Because then by the end, when I was, not going to lie, end of July and August on the last stretch of my treatment, it really crushed me. I was ready to be done with this. I was sick. I wasn't able to, it was my senior year too. So I lost like my senior year summer of my normal friends. Like I got to do a lot of stuff and I'm very fortunate for what I got to do, but there was a lot of stuff that was taken away that summer that I was really looking forward to, traveling with friends more. Cause I was so limited on my immune system was zero because a lot of the treatments too that I got, there was an impact. It could infect my lungs, long-term and a lot of other stuff. So there was one thing we didn't do to bring up my immune system to try and count, not try and cross over to affect me long-term because I was still so young. So a part of that was my immune system was next to zero. And I was very high risk of getting sick. So I had to be crazy on top of it, which is kind of funny today in a way, because now the way this virus is, it's like, this is how I had to live. When I traveled, I had a mask. I had hand sanitizer with me anywhere I went. I had to clean all my foods and vegetables and everything super well. And I couldn't eat anything fresh. It had to be more cooked or that just because my immune system was basically non-existent. My mom was wiping down everything that I'd go to or touch just to get through it and stay as healthy as I could. Because if I got sick before a treatment, I'd have to delay the treatment and then prolong everything. So.
You were quoted as saying, "This will make me a stronger and better person. I've just lost a season. It's not as if I'm done." And it sounds to me like you're living with intentionality. That is, you're living on purpose and making the decision on how this will affect you. That's what I'm reading into this. What was your mindset about how this would affect you as a person?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, when you're 18, you're usually on the top of your world, you're growing, you're maturing, you're about to go to college, really start your life. And I got this thrown at me and it's like, whoa, step back kind of situation. And I had to change my thoughts to moving, towards like, I'll get through this and I'm going to be stronger in the end, because this is, I just knew there was no other choice or option. And that's kind of how I had to go about things, get through it, I guess.
So how did you combat? Now, I'd imagine, as with probably anyone who would go through this, something like this, there might be moments where you might think, why me? You're feeling sorry for yourself, and you know, maybe self-pity. That's probably normal. Mm-hmm. What did that look like to you?
Yeah. So one thing that's through it all, and people close to me would know, I was more impacted on that situation years later after my chemo than I am treatment than I was through it.
Oh.
I was very much the type, I didn't want people to be sad for me. I didn't want people to feel, I didn't like when people cried around me. I had my moments where I'd break down, and that was more towards the end, just when people were going off to college and I had to go, like I got to go to school and doctor was like, you're not going to college your first semester. I'm like, yes, I am. And he's like, no, you're not. He's like, there's no way you'll be able to take school and this, because another thing with the chemo is the chemo fog and your head, you're just not fully there. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll just take 12 credits. And he's like, no, you're not taking 12. And he's like, you'll take one or two classes. I'm like, fine, I'll take nine credits, three classes. And that's what I got him to let me do. But I had to actually fly out, move into like where I was staying for college in Colorado Springs, and then fly back for my final treatment. And that was the only time where I really felt like I broke down through the chemo, where I had like just it all hit me, but then it was the end, so I was kind of okay to get through it. But yeah, during it, in the beginning, I didn't like people to feel sad or cry for me, or oh, the pity of missing a race or missing a season, because I was like, well, I'm going to get through this. I'm fortunate it's one that's very curable. I have a plan in place. Let's just tackle this and do it, and I'll be okay through it. But then a few years later, I didn't take into consideration how much that affected my body, the chemo and everything through it. I kind of finished treatment and I was like, all right, I'm done. See you, cancer. Like you're cured. I'm now able to continue my life how I was before cancer. And that's where I was wrong. My body was a very different body than going into cancer than out of cancer. Because and I kind of then went through a part where almost survivor guilt in a way, where I saw people who weren't making it through and were struggling like to an extent so much more and passing away and losing their lives. And I kind of then went to this, why was I so fortunate in a way? I mean, I was not fortunate to get cancer, but it was very straightforward for me. It was very much like, it was hard, but I didn't have the massive complications or really was on my deathbed per se. I mean, there was a risk, but I never really let myself think that risk. Until my mom had a lot more fears going through it. And she stayed strong through when it was around me, but I know she broke down a lot through it because she just knows the risk that actually to go. But I guess never I went to that till years later. And then when I realized my body had changed, everything had shifted. And that's where it was more like, why am I still dealing with this right now? I had to go through this point, but I thought now I'd be normal. And I actually, you're not normal once you go through it anymore. You've got a scar on you that is there forever. So
you go through, if I can describe it this way, and correct me if I'm wrong here, so you go through the physical recovery, and then sometime later you're going through kind of the mental, I suppose, recovery. And so how do you get through that? What do you learn from that? If you're determined to, you know, resolve how it affects you, that you're choosing how it affects you, when you're going through that second stage of that mental anguish, what's recovery look like to you? And how do you make your, did you feel like you became a better person? What way did you feel like you improved?
Yeah, so I went to a psychologist for a while and had to really talk with her a lot. And I owe her so much, really, because we dug deep into like issues and topics and stuff that I just kind of kept within me and kind of stayed buried through the cancer and through other aspects. And I really started to open up with her, but she then learned me. So she knew when I wouldn't want to talk, but she'd dig and dig. And she really got so much out of me where by the end, I had so much stress out of me. And like, I was relieved for a lot of it and realized how strong everything going through it had made me, that there is a reason, I guess, to go through this, and I need to just make the most of it in that way. And there's a reason I was able to, like, I can't look at it as like, well, I survived, but someone didn't. It's like, there must be something out there that I have to just make the most of it in that way.
What was it did you find that allowed you to get through this, whether through the cancer or subsequently?
So my family were very strong in faith. So I relied a lot on just like knowing I was being looked after. There's a reason. I'm big on like, there's a reason for everything. So there's, and you don't always have control. And I just had to go with it and learn to go with the flow more and not be so stressed on a timeline or like, oh, things should go this way and trend up, up, up. It's not as straightforward as everything is. And I owe a lot to my family. We got really close through it. There were also times we got in some massive arguments later on through it all, just because of just the impacts. And I was frustrated because I wanted to be back competing where my friends and peers were. Yeah. I just thought I would be back to that level, and I wasn't. I would break down faster. My body was sometimes not as robust. I used to be super robust when I was younger and through my junior years before cancer, but then that was not the effect anymore. Like, one thing I learned, it's taken years until now. Like, doctors told me it'd take years for me to even get back to being in a competitive setting sport. And I was racing elite levels 6 months later. So, but it was short lived because then my body would break down and then I'd go back up a little bit and then I'd break back down. So one thing that helped get me through it too is I focused a bit on school through that period as well, and took some stress and focus off of triathlon and put it towards completing my degree and putting time towards that. So, and letting my body fully recover and absorb everything and kind of finish maturing, because that was another thing. I went through chemo at 18, where you're finishing puberty, you're finishing growth. So it really messed me up more so than I realized at that point. And it's something that there's just not a lot of studies on it, because not a lot of kids will go through a chemo at that age to the extent. And it's crazy, but over a year ago, I grew again. I grew about like half an inch or almost an inch. And I've put on a lot more muscle and strength. So it's like I'm 27 right now, but it's like my body is a 22-year-old. So.
So it kind of paused momentarily, sort of.
Yeah, it did. I just never let my body fully like heal after the chemo. Like, I really, looking back, I should have not come back into intense triathlon training. I should have just come back and gone to school and stayed healthy and like done a little bit of sport, but really let my body put back its weight on and absorb. And instead of trying to just go back into triathlon training, and thing with triathlon or any sports, you're constantly breaking it down and then letting it recover back up. But my body had broken down to nothing. I lost 15 pounds and or more through through the treatment. And I never let myself reabsorb it all.
And your coaches, Jonah or Jonathan Hall and Bobby McGee, suggested that you take some additional time off to recover. And so it seems like you have quite a close relationship with your coaches. And so what's been the role of coaching in your life, in your athletic career?
Yeah. Through my career, I've had phenomenal coaches. Like, even when I was young, there's the guy who started the triathlon team, Keith Dixon. He's the reason I am where I am today. Like, and I'm actually still really close with him and always check in on him. But he then sculpted my mindset to like, oh, you can actually make it this sport and continue. And then I got to another coach, which was Romus, Lucas Rosbikas' dad. And he sculpted me into become, like, through my early, my late junior years. And actually, he was my coach through my cancer. And I just, like, I was just fortunate to have so many coaches that were, like, cared for you as a person as well. And then shortly after that is when I was introduced to Jono and Bobby. And that is a point when I was on my 2013 where I was like, came to them. I remember sitting in this office specifically and I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Like, this sport, I might have to just stop because I've been like on so many highs and lows and broken down. I'm not consistent. And then that's when they told me, take time, take a break. So I took 5 months basically off. I would get one activity a day. One of the main focuses that whole period was doing strength session 3 times a week, but everything else was one activity I got to choose if I wanted to. But I focused on school all summer. I knocked out an insane amount of credits and had a different focus. And then I was kind of ready to come back. And that's where Jono and Bobby kind of took the reins, and I'd been working with them since. And it's just, we've just developed this relationship, and they get me and I get them. And we've just got this trusting, like, relationship. And I know they're looking out for the best of me, and they've been very good at holding me back at times and then pushing me. And we've, like, I wouldn't be the person or athlete where I am today if I hadn't been introduced to both of those guys.
What are some of the most positive traits in a coach that, that you would say are, you know, most beneficial or most impactful to you?
I think there's a fact, like, I think they need to be, they're very positive in a way, but they also push you. So I'm very big on, I've grown up with coaches that are, and this is how I've always been, where I don't like coaches who fluff stuff up your butt. Like, basically, like, oh, you're great, good job, constantly saying that. I like it when they praise you for something, you know you did well. They're one not to always say good job on everything, because then it's like, what's good and what's not. They're more just, they get on with the business. And I think they're looking out for you as a person as well, not just, they don't see you just as an athlete. So they try to sculpt you into being a well-rounded person. And I think that's one thing John has really worked on me on, is my just outside life, outside, and discipline, and taking and carrying yourself in a positive way and manner, and being, doing the little things right that then create the bigger picture. So even the simplicity of, like, making your bed in the morning, like closing, like putting the dishes away, just like on top of all those little things will then translate over to the sport side of things. And I think really it's just having a relationship where it's not a dictatorship. The coach doesn't have the power. Like, you have this respect for the coach, but it's, you're more one-on-one too as well. And you can say your thoughts, they can say theirs, and you can just collaborate together. I think that's huge. Like, a coach is open for change as well, not someone who's just my way or the highway. That's something that has never worked for me with the coach. And I don't think it's really I think it can be toxic when it's like a dictatorship.
Okay. That's interesting, kind of working with you, not just as an athlete, but to grow up as a person, as a man, as a human, really.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said something interesting there about making your bed and washing the dishes and just, you know, kind of mundane everyday type of tasks. Would you agree with the notion that the small disciplines lead to bigger disciplines?
Oh, 100%. And I very much learned that. It's funny because it was 2014, Jono sat me down and was just talked some discipline stuff on things I needed. And one of it was, you need to learn to just be able to make your bed every morning when you get up, no matter what. And to that day of that conversation, I make my bed every day. Even if I'm in a hotel, I'll put my hotel bed somewhat back together. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's like made with the pillows nicely up there, because you always have time for that. And I think those disciplines carry over to then into sport with the little things, because it's all about, at the end of the day, it's like the little things are what and add up to the big things. And it, at the elite level of sport, it's those one, little one percenters in the end of the day that are going to make the difference between the good and the great.
So the idea that you don't take shortcuts, for instance.
Yes, there's no shortcuts. And that's something with Jono as well. And it's very, I mean, like, we've had our times where, yeah, it's been hard because I'm not the most timely person. I have to focus really hard on being in order on stuff and keeping on top of things. And it's just something is kind of in me, but I'm working hard to do it and improve.
Going back to your athletic career, you know, the diagnosis and then starting to come back kind of until 11, 2012, and then 13 was up and down. And then gradually you seem to regain kind of your stride as far as your career goes. 2014 was a more successful year for you as your body and you're coming back. Yeah. Is it fair to say that there was a race in Chengdu, China that seemed like it was a turning point in your career?
Yeah, I would say that race. That was actually my first World Cup since coming back from cancer, really. And I'd done one before, but not really to the extent. And I went in with no expectations. John, it was a last minute thing to get on. They're like, go and do it. Let's have some fun and just see what you can do. And I shocked myself when I was second. I was in the contention for the win. And looking back on that, I just didn't quite have the experience or belief that, like, oh, I could win that thing. Or I think I could have won that race if I had played the strategy a little smarter. But I was so happy. Like, it just, from that moment, I felt like I've made it back and I can be competitive in this sport. It's not going to be a straightforward road, but it's shown with this work that I've started with John and Bobby that we're onto something. And we can make these, I can make it as a career and hopefully a professional athlete. And yeah.
There's something interesting about Chengdu as I read about your story and reflected on kind of your life to this point, was that, so coming out of cancer, you were thinking, your mindset was, you're focused on what you could do and not what you couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And as I read your Chengdu story, I thought, did that creep into your mindset a little bit in a way, or that maybe you didn't think you could win? It seems to me there might have been a learning there. I don't want to reach too much, but I read, I thought maybe that was possible.
Yeah, I went in with no expectations. It was a whole level I hadn't expected. Like that year, we never talked about racing the World Cup or doing any racing on that level yet. So I guess I set a limit on myself when it was, I really shouldn't have and gone with it more, but I was so happy to be out racing at that kind of level that I'd been watching.
Amazing.
And I was like, I'm doing it. I'm here. I've grown up watching this kind of level of racing and the people on the front make in the mix. And now I'm actually a player who's actually having a dig in the front, changing of pace and kind of has some control in the race. And that to me was very surreal in a way. Cause I'd always watched stuff and dreamed of it, but then it was actually happening.
It really was a pivotal moment in your career.
Yeah, I would say after that, my mind should change to not more of like, oh, let's see and test it out. Because I was testing the waters back, Bobby. That was the first year back after taking 5 months off, reset and kind of the new me in a way. And I was like, let's just see where this goes. Let's give it a go. I'm still pursuing school all the way. So if for some reason this doesn't work out, I have my backup ready to go. And then at that point, I saw with the limit, like I'd been doing full triathlon training for, I think, 6 months at that point. And I was like, okay, we're on to something. I'm definitely believe I can make this happen. And so that was my turning point. It's kind of like my second turning point. I had one when I was a junior at a junior worlds 1 year that was like, I know I can make it after that. And my mind shift changed. And then this was like my second shift where it was like, I can do this.
Wow. Okay. You've talked about, you know, your comeback, both through cancers and also, you know, as an athlete. And so what is it, you know, and you rose through the ranks reasonably quickly, but what do you think separated yourself as an elite athlete from someone who's great, but not at that elite level?
One thing that helped separate me is my passion for the sport. I'm a very passionate person in a way where when I find something I like, I want to give 100% to it and do all I can to be the best I can. And I don't take shortcuts. And I'm not one who it's like, I was never one at practice where it's like trying to get out of a set or try to put something out. I was more the one that sometimes getting held back to say, no, you're not doing this one today. You're only doing this amount. And I just think I was just always, even when I was younger, just driven and had such a love and passion for the sport and just getting out and swim biking and running as a whole that I think drove me then to make produce results where I didn't see it as like just a job or a difficult task to go out and do stuff and push myself. I loved and enjoyed to do it. So it became easy for me as I continued to go to that extent.
So then fast forwarding to 2016, you qualify for an Olympic test event.
Yeah.
And for the Rio Olympics and you don't quite qualify. What are you doing differently now to change your approach as we close towards Tokyo, whenever that is?
Yeah. So going back when I first was sitting down with John and Bobby, starting working with them, 2016 was never in the equation at that point. We were kind of like, no, we're not. We're just going to keep going. And 2020 is the goal of where we're building to as a person, because we knew it was a long road ahead. So we went from all of a sudden, then when that Chengdu result happened, and then I had a really good 2015 season, it was like, oh, wow, 2016 can happen. So we were starting to push. And then one go that happened in 2016 was I ended up with an injury early in the winter. So I was out for 2 months of running. And then I actually then a month before the trials got really sick in South Africa before and just couldn't recover to the extent where, yeah, the test event went pretty rough for me. And at that point, I know John, I was pretty crushed after in the beginning, but they put in perspective, it's like, we're going for 2020. That has always been the goal. And he had kind of come to the realization after I'd gotten sick that I probably wasn't going to make the team, but I'm not one to think like that. So I wanted to think, oh, I could do it. But it was just how much of it. The issue is like, I still didn't quite at that phase, that one, put on the strength and muscle and power that I had needed post-cancer and everything. But this second quad is where I fully really felt I'd matured and I've grown a lot stronger and put on a lot of weight. One crazy thing is I'm probably 5 kilos heavier than I was going into this season than I was going into 2016.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all muscle because I was getting testing done and it's like, it was pure muscle. The nutrition stuff was stoked. So I've had to work really hard with nutritionists just to get things right and put on the strength and make it a power. And I've now all of a sudden started to, get into this, like have momentum going into this qualification. And honestly, this last fall was things started to click. And this year, going into this year, I had believed for the first time, I would say, I truly believed I was going to make that team this year. Now it's delayed a year, but I had first time in my mind and kind of verbally said, like, I'm going to be on that team. And that has been something I've always struggled with. I have struggled sometimes. I'm very hard on myself. I put myself down at times and I'm one to like sometimes not look. I just can be super hard on myself and I'm my own worst critic, which is a lot of people are. But so I don't always give myself the benefit of the doubt on situations. And I don't like to be one who makes excuses. But now, this was the first year where I was like, 2020 is going to be my year. So, but now we're not racing right now. So we're going to make it 2021.
2021. Still called 2020.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. And the delay I'm seeing is it doesn't hurt me, actually, because one issue is I've not had the most consistent buildups through the years. And now that I'm actually fully developed and getting stronger, it's like I'm able to lay this foundation consistently now and really get momentum going with that many of my peers and levels have had years of ahead of me on that end. So an extra year for me is not going to hurt me. I believe it's actually only going to help because I kind of remember talking to my mom and a couple people, I'm like, man, even next year, I think I'm going to be even better. And that's going to be the Olympic year. So I think it's still fall in place. And we're just always joking. We're like, yep, another thing to add to the story. Another thing to add to the book, an Olympic delayed year. What's that? That's fine. Because that's the thing too I'm able to experience is like, I've already had stuff taken away from me. I had the last junior worlds taken away from me from cancer. It's like, this isn't taken away. It's just delayed. So I'm still have that task ahead that I want to go. But I mean, the one thing, yeah, that hurt through my cancer stuff was that was my final year as junior in the junior category. And I truly believe that year, the way things were going, I was going to be world champion. And that's something I can't ever get back. But I just can't look at it that way.
Kevin, when you're doing that last rep or you're doing that last 10 seconds of a long, you know, exercise, and you're tired and exhausted and you don't feel like you can get through it, what do you do to finish things off strong?
It's funny you say this. So one thing, story about me is I've got these bracelets on my hand.
And can you hold it up a bit?
Yeah. So okay, there's different ones. And this, which one? There are a charity that I work, have helped me and granted a wish out in Chicago called Cal's Angels. And then after they helped me, I wanted to give back to them and help use this to help, like, my level of support to help at least promote them any way I could or give back. And they gave me this bracelet when I was doing a hospital party once with these kids. And one of them I've had on since 2014. So it's been on my wrist for 6 years. And I've collected more others. So there was actually one kid I mentored. His name is Damien. So it's like, we are with you, Damien. And it's Damien Gold. And then I've got another one that's like a different cancer thing that's like strength, hope, courage. And I look down at these sometimes and I just think of all I've been through and how much also this is what I want to do and how many times I was going through treatment at times, laying on the bed, super sick, just wishing I could go out and push myself in sport. So I'm like, I get to do this now. And this is cool. And that actually helped get me through at times. Like I would look at this wrist and look down at it and then continue that last rep. Or I still do it. Like I have songs that I'm very much attached to through my treatment that flash back and remind me of it. And sometimes to get me going, I will put that on the last rep. And I did it two weeks ago on a hill rep that was really tough. And the last one, I was like, oh, do I want to do this one? I don't know. And I turned that song on and I just instantly, I'm like, you know what, Kevin, you've been wanting to do this when you were sick and now you get to. So let's do this. Let's knock it out. This is easier than what you've been through before. So yeah, that would be kind of what I think about, just what I've been through and that I'm fortunate to be in this situation pushing.
Amazing. And so you're going back to the time where your deepest valley and also to kids that are fighting.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot more worse out there. And like, this is temporary what I'm going through right now. And that little last short efforts and pushing through that last bit. So that's kind of what I channel.
Can you let's do a shout out. Can you tell us about Cal's Angels?
Yeah. So Cal's Angels, they're a local charity. They start out really small and kind of were still quite small when I was going through it back in 2011. And they first, it was just lymphoma and like leukemias. They were helping out kids who are 18 and under. And so then they learned about me in the area. They were the town over. They granted a wish and helped my family with some support. And at first I was like, no, I don't want anything. Help someone else who needs something. I'm very fortunate for my family with what we've got. But they actually provided me an iPad. And little did I know how important that iPad was going to be through my treatment, because I brought it to me through my chemo sessions. I was using it all the time to watch shows in bed when I lay down. I put music on it all the time, communicate, talk with all my friends through it. And that was my like lifeline through all my sickness. And I'm so fortunate with them that after I said, I want to help give back now to them. And it's incredible what they've done. They've grown to now where they're helping everyone in like the whole Chicagoland area, any forms of cancer, granting wishes, doing hospital parties at the Lori Hospital in Chicago, making huge impacts, raising millions of dollars. They just did a fundraiser. They do a gala every year, and I went and spoke for it one time, and they're just now putting a lot more towards research and different events, and how much they've grown since and the impact they're doing is unbelievable. And they're a charity that's really close to my heart, and I'm really close to the people who are a part of it and started it up, and they've had a big impact on where I am today. And I check in with them a lot. So.
That's awesome. And I'm flashing their image up on the other side of the video here.
So yeah. So I have them on my suit too. So it's pretty cool. That's awesome. And I raced with a visor that they gave me, because I used to run with a hat that was from them, But with a lot of the hot races, I've switched to a visor. So it's actually a visor with the Cal's Angels visor on it. So.
Awesome. That'll get you through that last rep.
Yeah, definitely.
Seems to me, perhaps more than the average athlete, you've really had to learn to adapt and, in your words, also to be patient.
Yes, and patience is hard. Let me tell you, I've struggled at times. And that's the thing. I wasn't patient when I came back from chemo. I wasn't patient at different periods of time when I should have been. And that's why I think it's taken me longer than I have thought many, like, to get to where I was. But also, it's so foreign. No one knows the effects that truly chemo can truly have on you through these years and the complications. They don't tell you because they don't know. And it's also the sport we do. You're constantly pushing your body, and my body had already been pushed and stressed so hard that I have to be treated different. I'm not your standard person in that way, just because of this history and asterisk I have next to me.
The team selections were supposed to be, you know, right around now.
Yeah. The team was supposed to be named tomorrow. So it's crazy.
And, you know, the coronavirus is throwing everything off. So to me, this is an interesting case study in how, in adaptation again, being flexible. So what does a successful adjustment look like for an elite level triathlete like yourself, delaying a year, a full year, in light of everything that's happened?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to take a little bit of a step back. You can't stress the body too much through this time to be at risk of getting sick or some extent. But I think you just change your goals. So my goals are, I still see it as I need to keep improving as an athlete. I just can't take the time off and then get going racing once the racing starts. I have to, so we've just changed our focus to some training blocks. So getting some strength on the bike again, or improving some run aspects, and using this time to really buckle down on some areas that maybe we didn't always have the time for because we were traveling around and racing. Like, I can just lay a greater foundation down. And I think this is a good time where it tests you if you, how much you actually really enjoy the sport. And I've learned how passionate I still am about it and love to just simply go out and ride my bike or go for a run. So I haven't found this time as difficult as maybe some or think it could be when there's no race on the horizon, because I still like to go and push myself and test myself and get out and do things. So I think it's just a shift of, you still need to be improving, and it's still another year where you can make gains, but you just have to shift stuff. So we'll do a block period of training, and then we have a recovery week, or kind of let the body come down, and then maybe do a little bit of testing. So like a race simulation, and then build again. So you just kind of change the philosophy, and John has been really good with that with us and helping give us some specific tasks and targets and structure and outline. Just to keep, I think there's importance of keeping structure and like routine. I'm a big routine person. I need routine in my life, or I'll just like, you just find you waste time sometimes. So when you get up in the morning, you have tasks you're going to do, objectives and stuff, and tick them off, and you can finish the day and be like, I did that. I feel great about myself. And yeah.
You often refer to your support team, your family, your, you know, your support system. And you also talk about your teammates and you refer to your squad. It's a curious dynamic to me, because you're competing in an individual sport, and you would like to be world champion, would like podium finishes. That to me is a strange dynamic. What does that look like from your point of view?
Yeah. I mean, that's something I've always put myself in ever since I was younger. I was on a kids triathlon team. And I think that's developed my mindset of seeing how much better you can be when you surround yourself with the greatest teammates as well, and a group and squad environment, because everyone's holding themselves accountable. If this person's doing this, you gotta want to push this. And everyone, the cool thing about triathlon is there's three sports, disciplines, and within it, different session type of workouts, and everyone has their strengths. So everyone can contribute to the group in a way that's pushing someone to improve. And so the group I'm in right now is phenomenal, where it's like, we've got some of the best runners in the ITU. We've got some of the best swimmers there, and then riding, and there's the strengths, and then everyone's pushing each other to a way. And it just keeps things fun and lively. And also, there have been times where one of us has had a bad race, but someone else hasn't then. And it's fun still to celebrate their victory when And you can kind of see it as you've played a contributing role into that success by helping each other in a way and working towards the goals, because this sport's hard. I mean, you spend hours out training, and doing it alone can get tough. So I think just having a team around you and a support system is where you can really advance in the sport and do things.
So even though you're competing against each other, it's still iron sharpens iron.
Yes. And I just think there's something to be said. Yeah, you just have these. I mean, you see a lot of groups out there in international squads, and those guys consistently are improving each other, bettering each other, because you're all holding each other accountable. And it keeps things fun, too. That's the thing, too. It's not, you go out and you're just joking around, messing with each other, and then things get serious when you do your session, and then you turn off and are having fun again. And it's just a lot of bantering going on. And I would not be the athlete where I am today without the squads and groups I've been a part of. And the squad I'm with right now is a really special squad that I've been with for years now. And yeah.
That's amazing. And so it seems like you've surrounded yourself with a good team, and you seem to have a healthy look at things. And I wanted to ask you, there's another fascinating story on Slow Twitch that was written about you, and it was about a coin you received that had a verse of scripture on it. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us about that.
Yeah. So this is back when I was right at the price. My mom had seen my neck and seen the lump, and I'd gone in and got all my rounds of scans and MRI, CTs. And the next, on this Tuesday, so I got all my scans on Monday and Monday night, and then blood work's done. And then on Tuesday morning, I was, there was a high school church that I went to and helped and did a talk to all these kids, and with the pastor I worked with. And we talked about sport and also my faith and just everything. And one of these questions I got asked there was, what would happen if you never had triathlon anymore? Like, what would you do? And I was like, well, there's more to life than just triathlon. That's why you just, like, there's so much more out there that you can't just have one focus. And it's crazy because right after that, I had this kid come up to me then out of the blue, handed me this coin that had the first Isaiah 40:31, which was, but the people who trust the Lord will become strong again. They will rise as an eagle in the sky. They will run and not need rest. They will walk and not become tired. And when he said this prayer over me then and handed me this coin, and I could tell this coin meant a lot to him. It was a very special coin. And then he walked away, and I just was kind of like, whoa. And then an hour later, I got the diagnosis that I've been told to come home, because then I was off like somewhere else, and my parents had missed, like, someone told me, Kevin, you must go home now. And I was kind of like, well, okay, I'll go home in a little bit. And they're like, no, you need to go home now. So I go home, parents are at the table, and they break the news that I have cancer. So when that kid was saying that verse and prayer over me, because he prayed over me too, that's when my parents were getting the news from the doctors that my scans came back that I had lymphoma. And yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah. So I've had that coin with me, and it's, yeah, I don't know. It was one of those, left me speechless. And to this day, I don't know how to put it any other way besides it's just one of those, my family calls them God moments. And I just think I was really being looked after, and I felt safe after that in a way. Like, I mean, maybe that was something that just helped ease everything through. It's like, there's more out there, and I was being looked after, and I would be okay.
That's amazing. And so this boy, after your talk, comes up to you out of the blue. You didn't know him. He just comes up to you out of the blue, gives you his treasured coin.
Yeah.
Praise over you.
And praise over me. Puts in my hand and says, here, I want you to have this. And does a prayer over me and then walks away and shows me the verse. And I was just like, oh, cool. And it had the eagle on it with the verse and the saying. And yeah. And I mean, the verse couldn't have been any more relatable to what I was about to go through too. And just trust in the Lord and where it's going to take me.
you've been asked in the past about why you recovered, and you talk about your family and your friends and your teammates and your coaches, your medical supports. If I can ask this, from a faith perspective, does it feel like you were granted a second chance in some way?
I guess I've never looked at it that way to an extent, but I guess so. Like, it was kind of a moment. It's like, there's a reason I'm still supposed to be here. I wasn't meant to go yet. And I can make this, I can spin this into a very positive approach and share my story and impact others and kind of show you can get through this. And when you go through cancer or some serious life illness, the road will be hard, but you can make it back and better than you were before. And it's just a matter of how you look at it. And that's how I want to be a story to be. There's no timeline to when things will go back to how they were or better than they were, or if they ever will, but it's your approach on how you look at it. And I would say it's taken me till it's 2020 now. And that was in 2011 that I went through that. It's taken me 8 years to really come full circle of what I went through. Cause I would say in the end of 2019 is when I fully accepted everything I've gone through, and I can make it, realized just it created who I am today. And there's a lot that can come of this and provide hope that even when people count you out or think you must change your ways, if you want it and do it, you can do it. So.
Wow. So, man, this has been really good. And I'll just wrap up here, but just stay on the line afterwards. But we do wish you all the very best. But it's been a pleasure, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was amazing to me, the insights he learned, and from that chance encounter with that other lady, focus on what you can do and not on what you can't, and living his life this way. I thought it was a great lesson in attitude and how we approach difficulties in life. And then again, how he changed his thinking, really refusing to feel sorry for himself. I really believe that those who lead themselves well do have thinking habits that separate themselves from others. And it got me thinking, whether we're going through cancer or not, what a deep reflection that we heard from Kevin, from someone who's really lived through it, and really grateful for his insights. He talks about the benefits that coaching gave to him, and how he was able to come back and be successful, and that turnaround race in Chengdu, just such a pivotal moment in his career, representing not just a landmark in his triathlete career, but really in his life. And so glad to hear him thriving. And I'm a coach, and I would love to interact with you. I'm at evolutionofleaders.com. And so I would really enjoy hearing from those of you about that. If you enjoyed hearing Kevin's story, he plans to share more about his journey, and that's going to be his Instagram every Sunday, and you can see what's gotten him to where he is today. You can follow him at Kevin McDowell 1, and this is on Instagram, and I'll have it in the show notes. But let's give him some love and some follows and some likes, and Cal's Angels too. The amazing work that those folks do, really outstanding, inspiring stuff from someone who survived cancer and now giving back and thinking of the kids even as he races, just to grind out that extra rep and just to get there a little bit faster. If you enjoyed this interview, please like, subscribe, and share. That means so much to me. Thank you so much.